God was not in the roaring, crushing, rending wind. He was not in the world-shaking earthquake. He was not in the fire. But he was in the still, small voice, the still, whispering voice. You know, about 20 years ago, I was riding along in a plane with Father Benedict Rochelle, and he was writing a book, and he asked me to proof the galleys. It's called A Still Small Voice, which, of course, is another translation for that, whatever it was translated today in the reading, a small whispering sound. In this book, Father Benedict, as he prefers to be called, makes the point that he deeply appreciates private revelations and is very much influenced by them in his life, like Lourdes, Fatima, and such. One of the themes of the book is ultra, ultra, ultra caution in terms of private revelations and visions. Why? Because the devil so frequently in history has very effectively counterfeited them and even inspired self-deception in them. St. John of the Cross, the great master of the mystical life, I'm going to use just one example from him of, you know, when people desire to see with their external eyes, hear with their ears, smell, taste, touch, kind of mystical things. There's been a long history of this, and even a lot of those things are from God. But St. John was very cautious about this. He said, "It must be known that even though these apprehensions can come to the bodily senses from God, one must never rely on them or accept them. Such manifestations," he said, "ought always to be considered as more surely from the devil than from God. For the devil possesses greater leeway in influencing the exterior and corporeal part of our human nature. He can deceive the soul more readily through this action than through a more interior and spiritual kind." And then he gives kind of an illustration. "The devil, too, is adept at suggesting to individuals a secret self-satisfaction that becomes truly obvious at times. He often purveys objects to the senses, presenting to the sense of sight images of the saints in most beautiful lights." In fact, St. Ignatius had his own experience. He saw this beautiful image, which kept him in consolation for weeks, but then took him away from doing what he was supposed to be doing. And now suddenly, ha-ha, not from God. "The devil can present dissembled words into the sense of smell, fragrant odors in the mouth, sweetness in the sense of touch, delight. He does all this so that by enticing persons through these sensory objects, he may induce them into many evils. Such representations and feelings consequently must always be rejected. Even though some may be from God, this rejection is no affront to him. Nor will one, by rejecting and not wanting them, fail to receive the effect and fruit God wishes to produce through them." That shocked me when I first read that. Even if they're from God, St. John of the Cross says, reject them. Because, again, the devil is so... And he said, God will get through, don't worry. Because the devil is so good at counterfeiting them. I remember, at the beginning of my spiritual life, when I had just converted, I really wanted revelations, private revelations and visions. I really wanted them. Which St. John says is one of the first signs that you're not on the right track. I fasted for months on bread and water. Fasted for months. Slept 2 or 3 hours a night. And guess what happened? Guess what God gave me? Nothing. Nada. Not even a drop of mystical experience. I read all these mystics as if they can have it, why can't I? You know, had a little vision there or something. But then I thought, but you know, as life goes on, I found out that God gave me his best gift, his very best gift, the ordinary way. Cardinal Ratzinger was asked once in one of those interviews with Peter Sewald. He said, do you have any kind of mystical visions? He kind of laughed. He said, no, I'm just an ordinary Christian. Oh, ordinary. Would that I should be so ordinary. But in any event, the ordinary way is God's greatest gift. How do we know it? Well, look at the life of Christ. 30 years he spent in what I call the ordinary life. 3 years, miracles, teachings, preachings, healings, exorcisms, but 30 years. And in Nazareth, they didn't even recognize him as anything extraordinary. Oh, there goes Joshua. He's a nice kid, isn't he? Didn't even recognize him as anything extraordinary. Just think, have you ever lived in a neighborhood? I have, a number of times. Think of some nice kid in your neighborhood. What if he turned out to be the creator of all things out of nothing? The most sacred and hallowed and awaited redeemer of all human race. Some kid. Sheesh. They didn't even recognize him. Isn't this the carpenter's son? When he came to reveal himself? Jesus was showing us something there. He was sanctifying the ordinary life. St. Augustine, I picked up this homily once by him on St. John, and it said, sometimes we're looking for those visions and revelations and everything and miracles, and we miss the miracle of daily life. We miss the miracle of a leaf, of a bird, of existence. St. Jose Maria is the great apostle of the still small voice, of finding your holiness in the ordinary things of daily life. St. Therese of the Child Jesus, once they were talking to her about Lourdes, one of my favorite places in the world, by the way, and she said, I prefer the monotony of sacrifice. St. Therese. I remember when all of us were running around trying to have visions and private revelations. We were studying at the Pontifical Institute at St. John's University in New York, and Father Hardin was getting a little tired of us. And so he once said in a talk, he said, I prefer the mysticism of fatigue. I was like, oh, jeez, Debbie Downer. But anyway, but you know, he was making a point because, you know, we were getting out of hand there. So in any event, why do we, and a lot of people, sometimes seek these visions and, you know, private revelations? I think one of the reasons is because the way of faith, by the way, when Blessed John Paul II came to write his doctoral thesis on St. John of the Cross, did he write it on the mystical marriage and those higher forms of mysticism, which for me are incomprehensible, but I love to read about them? His thesis was faith in John of the Cross. Faith. The way of faith. And John saw in his mystical experiences that foundation consistently as the foundation. Faith. Faith. Faith in the humdrum ways of daily life. In finding God there. And as many of you know, one of my spiritual directors was Father Walter Chizik, who was tortured for 5 years in Lubyanka in Moscow and 18 years in Siberia, as they used to say in Boston, and 15 years in hard labor camps. I was looking at his book, and he was talking about this temptation that he and this other father faced to leave Siberia. when they had been there just a little while. And there was something that he said, though our situation may have been somewhat unique, the temptation itself was not. It is the same temptation faced by everyone who has followed a call and found that the realities of life were nothing like the expectations he had in the first flush of his vision and enthusiasm. It is the temptation that comes to anyone, for example, who has entered the religious life with a burning desire to serve God and Him alone, only to find that the day-to-day life in religion is humdrum and pedestrian, equally as filled with moments of human misunderstanding, daily routines, and distractions as the secular life he left behind in the world. It is the temptation faced by young couples in marriage when the honeymoon is over and they must face a seemingly endless future of living together and scratching out an existence in the same old place and in the same old way. It's the temptation to say, this life is not what I thought it would be. This is not what I bargained for. It is not at all what I wanted either. If I had known it would be like this, I would have never made this choice. I would have never made this promise. You must forgive me, God, but I want to go back. You cannot hold me to the promise made in ignorance. You cannot expect me to keep a covenant based on faith without any previous knowledge of the true facts. It is not fair. I never thought it would be like this. I simply cannot stand it. I will not stay. I will not serve. That temptation against that part of the ordinary, which is extraordinarily ordinary. The humdrum and the pedestrian. He writes about St. Francis Xavier, too, in another part. He said, it would be easy, we think, to ourselves to be constantly on fire with that vision if we could be a Francis Xavier or a Richard the Lionhearted, converting the Indies or scaling the walls of Jerusalem, a sword in hand, caught up in the tumult of battle to win some great victory. We forget that Xavier, too, lived one day at a time, frustrated and perhaps discouraged each 24 hours, and he goes on and on, filled with petty little people and everything. That was the bulk of his life, not these dramatic moments, which were exceptional. Now, faith. Faith. I could give a whole other homily, and you will hear it sometime, on the first sin in human history. What was the first sin? Was it disobedience? Yes. Was it pride? Yes. Was it ingratitude? Yes. But there's a sin that came before that, phenomenologically. Hit me when I read the Pope's encyclical on Mary, Redemptoris Mater, number 37. I remember my encyclical verses like the Protestants remember their scriptural verses. Number 37. He talked about that sin at the outset of human history. When the father of lies sowed a seed of doubt in the heart of Eve, the sin of little faith. Peter, today, great act of faith, stepping out on that water. You know, God, I make a distinction in life. I've made a distinction. I make a distinction between throwing yourself off a tower and walking on water. We are not to tempt God by doing something radical that is really irrational. But sometimes he does ask us to walk on water in faith. I remember when I first was ordained, I was living in Rome at our general house, and we Oblates of the Virgin Mary were founded to give the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius. So I thought, hey, you know, let me get to this. Let me get to what we're supposed to be doing. So I went around to the universities there in Rome, the Gregorian, the Angelicum, and put little pieces of paper here and there. Spiritual exercises available. Call here. So I got a call from the head of a religious order. He said, we're having all of our novice masters throughout the world come and receive the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius. Do you have anybody there that can direct them? I said, sure, I could. I've never directed any before. I hang up the phone, right? And I'm walking away a few minutes later. I said, are you crazy? Are you nuts? These are, not only have you never directed, these are all spiritual masters that you're going to give them to. I said, I have to call him up and say, tell him, no, that was absurd. That was an absurd thing for me to do. But first, let me meditate on the gospel of today. Can you guess what the gospel was? I opened it up. It was this gospel. And I said, I looked at the tabernacle and I said, okay, Lord, you want me to walk on water? I will. And he gave me the grace. Well, I kind of did a little clever thing, too. I had studied with the number one man in the world for the exercises, so what I did was just memorized all his notes and became him. And afterwards, they said it was the best exercise they'd ever had. So, you know, God will ask us to walk on water in faith. And it was a great act of faith that Peter, but there was a worm in the apple. There was a worm in the apple when fear came, right? And our Lord wanted to show Peter that worm, the sin of little faith. And what we are to do is to lead a continually examined life, a continually examined life, rooting out that worm. Bishop Sheen used to say, there are hidden corners of our souls where the cobwebs of atheism still are. We have to find them and sweep them out. That sin of little faith. But again, our Lord permits those, like sleeping in the boat and everything. There's a whole, like, I don't want to give my other homily, but, you know, sleeping in the boat and everything, he permits those times of fear and everything so we can see where we lack, so that we can not sink in the water. We can walk the whole way. Shake hands with Jesus on the water there instead of sinking down. Faith. Faith, faith, faith in the ordinary way. And, you know, again, if God leads us, does the extraordinary find. But where he prefers, you know, Thomas, you believe because you have seen. Blessed, blessed are those who do not see yet believe. God does not come in the rending, roaring, rock-crushing wind. He does not come in the earthquake. He does not come in the fire. He comes in the small, whispering voice, based in faith. That faith that we now stand and profess. We believe in one God, the Father, the Almighty.